Welcome to the Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. I'm John Barbon, and with me is a guest we've had on PhyLife before, Brian Chung. He's a good friend, and he has a what's your blog, Brian?
Evidencebasedfitness.blogspot.com.
Okay, and Brian's done he has his PhD in sports medicine, and he's currently a resident in plastic surgery. So, considering Brian's expertise, we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be talking about body fat distribution and basically just the look of our bodies and kind of what makes up our bodies. We'll talk a little bit about water and a little bit about muscle structure and basically what we're all after and kind of, I guess, the nuts and bolts of what makes you look the way you look and how a lot of us and even, you know, people doing plastic surgery can misinterpret sometimes or not quite have the right guess at how much fat we might be holding and different things like that. So Brian's got a lot of insight into fat distribution patterns and things that you won't really find in the fitness media because, you know, your average fitness marketing commentator just doesn't have this type of background or insight. So so I guess welcome to this show, Brian, to start
with.
We were just having this conversation. So let's get right into it. So obviously our guys are in the middle of contest prep for Adonis. You know, there's money on the line, so everyone's trying to get in shape.
Yeah.
And terms like stubborn belly fat get tossed around. And people are changing, they're noticing. You know, this is for some guys. This is the first time they've really dropped weight, and they're seeing their body change right in front of them. And some of them don't really know what to expect. Actually, and most guys who diet down for the first time, they know they're going to get leaner. They just really don't know what to expect, how it's going to happen, what areas is going to show up first, and all that kind of stuff. So, I don't know. Let's just start bantering on, body fat distribution. And, I mean, I've already explained to guys generally what to expect, but you were already touching on the fact that, to start with, I guess men and women have different fat distribution patterns, and I'm also researching the different degrees that the different areas of fat on the body can and will mobilize and burn at not necessarily different rates, but more or less in different patterns.
Yeah, so there's a preferential, supposedly, like, from what we understand so far, there does seem to be a preferential order in which fat is accumulated and lost. And generally the rule is sort of first on, last off, which I don't think is surprising or that mysterious to most people if they've been weight training or have been reading around in the magazines. That's probably not new to your listeners.
Explain what you meant by that first. I know what you mean, but put it in simpler terms.
So, for instance, guys will tend to accumulate fat on their belly first, and then, you know, it'll deposit in your thighs and your ass. Sorry, I guess I should use the word bum. I'm a doctor, so.
But.
And then generally just sort of around in other places, your face also gets fatter, and your neck and those sorts of areas. As you lean down, your hope is obviously that you're going to, you know, get abs. But your abs are probably the last place that your body is really going to lose that fat because it's sort of the first place that it goes. And it's not necessarily an explanation as to why that happens. It's just sort of the observation of what actually does happen.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody knows for sure why it is that, you know, you lose fat first elsewhere when you deposit it first in your belly. It just sort of happens that way. So if you're quite large to begin with and you're not noticing a heck of a lot of difference in your measurements at your waist, but you are noticing that, you know, your arms are getting slimmer, your shoulder, you know, that sort of people are talking on the forums a little bit about that shoulder drop, that's probably because your body is losing fat in those areas before it loses the waist fat.
Now, I had a theory about is that there is some waist fat coming down. There's just so much more of it. Proportionately, it's hard to notice.
Yeah, and there's probably something to that as well. I think that's probably not incorrect since it's also the first place that you start accumulating. I think what happens is that, you know, you start accumulating at your waist and then the other parts of your body are just a little lagged behind, but it's not like your body stops accumulating at your waist and says, oh, we're done the waist, let's move to the shoulders, or let's move to the face, right? So if you sort of, I'm trying to think of like a good analogy, but nothing's coming to mind right now of sort of that sort of lag experience of saying, you know, you're continuing to accumulate at the waist. I think it may be a good way of looking at it is that if your waist measurement is going up and your shoulder measurement is also going up and they're going up at similar rates, then you might just be putting on fat.
Right. Exactly. And that parlays nicely with last week's talk about the muscle index where, I mean, you can experience increases in measurements at the shoulder, at the arms.
Yeah.
But if you don't divide that, if you don't normalize that, or I don't know what the statistical word is, if you don't account for and compare to the waist measurement, I mean, you can have a 20-inch arm and most of it can be fat, but you'll probably have a 50-inch waist with it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right. So I think it's a little bit of both where, yes, you have more fat at your waist, but it's also that you're as the fat comes down, it comes down from all over the place. It's not like your body picks one specific site to take from first.
Right.
It's taking from everywhere, but it also tends to store it at your waist preferentially.
Of course.
If you're a guy, and around your thighs and your butt if you're a woman.
Right. And then
your breasts as well for women. So.
And since there's more fat to get rid of at the waist, even a uniform, I almost try to think of it as if you're just peeling off one thin layer of fat all over your body, since there's more at your waist, it's the last to show that anything changed. Whereas a little bit of fat that's even stored in your, down in your hands and in your face, that shows up right away because it's just
there's not that much there.
Yeah,
but then on top of that, there's also an ordering that happens as well. So yes, if you imagine peeling an onion back and saying, yes, there's more fat around your waist. So even if we uniformly peel, like let's say, 5 millimeters off of this person all over, there's that effect of there being more around the waist, and so you're not going to see it at your waist as quickly.
Mm-hmm.
But also there's also the preferential deposition and mobilization of fat from those areas as well. So you're not just peeling 5 millimeters off. You're peeling 5 millimeters off, and then on top of that, you're peeling maybe a little less than that around your waist because your body is going to mobilize the other millimeters first.
And for people who are listening, that the reason that can be different is fat actually, its characteristics aren't necessarily uniform, and things that are different are like receptor density of certain receptors that receive the hormones that tell that fat cell to mobilize fat.
That's right.
So, and it's very pronounced in women in the butt and hip area.
Yeah.
They can be very, very lean in the upper body, like six-pack lean,
yeah,
but still have kind of a smooth, not a bad looking, but a smooth looking, not, shredded, ripped leg, because the combination and the mix and the density of the receptors that receive the hormones that tell that fat cell to mobilize fat.
Yeah, they'd have to get that much leaner to get down to that. Degree of definition, if
exactly.
That's what they wanted.
Yeah. So actually, I'm doing some research right now on the ordering there, and it seems for women it's arms, it's like arms, trunk, legs in that order of what mobilizes fat faster.
Yeah. Yeah, and I would say that's probably similar for guys as well, except it's abdo is your last.
Yeah, I think abdomen's the last for guys.
Site, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so that's sort of that's pretty well understood, I think, in our field at any rate when we're looking at, cosmetic surgery and those sorts of patients, and breast reduction patients as well, because they have to lose a certain amount of weight usually to qualify for a breast reduction in certain provinces.
Oh, really? Okay, so so you can predict. Okay, so then how about this? Now, I don't know if a whole lot of guys really get this, but the difference between visceral fat and abdominal fat and subcutaneous and kind of what makes up a gut, I guess you could say. When you see a gut, there's more than one layer there.
Yeah, so there's the fat that's under your skin and sitting above your muscle, right? So if we cut into your belly, we'll cut through the skin, and then right under the skin is fat. And then after the fat, there's a layer of fascia. There's actually two layers of fascia, but I won't get into that. And then eventually you're going to hit the muscle, the erectus abdominis or your ab muscle, which is what gives you that six-pack look. Mm-hmm. And then if you go past that, then there's another layer of fat, basically.
Under the abs.
Underneath the muscles of your abs. So past, you know, there's fat in between the muscles. So there's fat between your rectus abdominis and your transverse abdominis.
Right.
Right. And then there's also, and then after the transverse abdominis, you hit the peritoneum, which is the fascia that separates your muscle from your guts, right?
Yep.
So from your intestines and your stomach and all those innards. So then there's fat in that compartment as well, and that pads your organs. And you need a certain amount of visceral fat because that is what protects your organs against trauma and, you know, gives your organs nutrition when times are lean, you know, and from an evolutionary point of view, if you want to think about it that way. But guys tend to store most of their abdominal fat in the visceral sense, which is also generally possibly why they can get leaner faster than women, because they don't carry it subcutaneously as much.
And visceral fat mobilizes pretty quickly.
Yeah, and visceral fat is more amenable to it's more amenable to mobilization than subcutaneous fat. It's more easily accessible. It's more vascularized.
Higher blood flow.
Yeah. Whereas the fat in your skin is, you know, has a pretty good blood supply. It's not bad, but, you know, nowhere near as well as the stuff that's inside.
And so to think of it visually, that's why your waist measurement can come down, but
you don't have a six pack.
But you don't have a six pack. It's because the fat underneath your abs is burning quickly, and that's because the receptor density and like Brian just said, the blood flow, and there's a bunch of reasons why that fat can mobilize very quickly. So that measurement can come down, but you're not six pack ripped yet, because the layer that's above the muscle that's covering up that look, that takes longer to burn.
Yeah, exactly. And you can eventually get there. You just have to keep going.
And I guess that's why people try to characterize the fat as, quote, stubborn, as if it had an attitude.
That's right. Yeah. As though your body's sort of clinging to it in some way.
Yeah.
But, you know, if your calories are low enough and the rest of your body fat levels are low enough, then eventually your body is going to tap into that energy source, regardless of what it wants, quote unquote, what it wants to do, right?
So, yeah. And let's be clear, like we've said, it's not that it's not using it, it's just using it as a slower rate than other spots.
Yeah. Exactly. Mm-hmm. It's just sort of, that's just the way that the receptors are, and the receptors in the blood supply are distributed.
Mm-hmm. So I guess you shouldn't
get too discouraged if you're not seeing a six pack and your waist size is coming down. You may even hit your AI, like I've hit my golden ratio waist and I still don't have a six pack.
Right. So it's just a matter like that outer layer of fat still needs to, there's just more time, I guess.
Yeah.
Is the only other way to say it.
Yeah, exactly. Like, it means that you probably need to keep going, and don't get too discouraged about it. Or you can just accept the fact that you may just not have a six-pack at your ideal waist size.
And it's not necessarily a bad thing. It's not like people look bad at that ratio.
No,
it's
exactly.
And that's why I tell guys, I'm like, there's two different things to being six-pack.
Yeah.
And then I guess we can move on to the concept of being lean and ripped. Is two different things, and that some of that has to do with a lot of that has to do with water and how you genetically store water in the first place. And I guess there's also a little bit of a lack of understanding of what makes up the look, I guess you could say, of true, like, quote, rippedness.
Yeah, I think when you look at, again, I think you guys, I've listened to the Adonis podcast, so it's a lot of this is rehashed, and if people go into previous episodes, they'll hear very similar messages from podcast to podcast, which I think is good, because that just sort of reinforces things when you're playing the mind game with yourself of why you don't have a six-pack, is that, you know, you getting a six-pack is generally a temporary thing, right? It's not something that you always have. For most people anyways, unless you're genetically gifted in that respect. Most people have to, you know, when you're looking at photos of people, that's one point in time, that's not necessarily how they live their lives and all of that, unless it's their living, in which case they're always sort of in a diet mode,
mm-hmm.
right? And even then, like, I think even most fitness models will let things slide a little bit, you know, because they do have the warning, they have some warning at least that a a shoot is upcoming, and they're always sort of between, you know, one to 2 weeks or, you know, 1 to 4 weeks, you know, away from getting down to that really ripped look.
Exactly, yeah.
You know, and so they don't live in that ripped state all the time, right?
Very few people do, unless you're a true ecto who just, I mean, the catch with those people is they're almost always that lean, but they all almost have, they just can never have the muscle mass of the other, of
yeah.
basically the rest of the population.
Yeah,
so the trade-off's almost always there.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, you certainly, whether your six-pack shows through has a lot to do with, you know, whether you have a lot of subcutaneous fat or not. And then on top of that, you know, there's this whole water manipulation thing that people talk about.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And then I know we've talked about it before, and we're going to coach everyone at the end on how to get rid of some water, which actually isn't that hard. Anyone who's done Eat, Stop, Eat, or any sort of fasting recognizes that just, you know, 20 or 30 hours without food is a pretty good diuretic itself.
Yeah, exactly. You don't really need much more than that. You know, I don't think you have to be as extreme as, you know, some of those bodybuilding regimes of over drinking and then under drinking. And
well, that's what you and I talked about, right? The the hyponatremia, right?
Yeah, exactly.
So just basic.
Kind of, yeah, and I would say that's probably going a little far, unless you have some sort of high stakes issue that you really have to meet that for, and you would be willing to take that risk to do that for, right?
And I wouldn't think it's super risky because a lot of bodybuilders do it, but it's, you know,
yeah,
you may not feel great during it. You may not, and it may be a lot of hassle for nothing, not a lot. Man,
not a lot. It's a long run for a short slide. Long run for a short slide.
Yeah, like basically you could be doing a lot of effort that a normal fast would just, and not drinking any water, would have just done too.
Yeah,
so it's
exactly.
Like it's kind of like just way overdoing it to get the same result that you could have done with significantly less effort. So
that's right.
But I mean, we'll kind of run through the gamut of it in about a month, so everyone at least has an idea of what the ways are. And keep in mind, most of the models you see, as I've always said, use diuretics, so that they're going to do that stuff plus a drug intervention,
right?
And that's going to be so. Again, all right. So we've covered some stuff. And there's something you and I talked about a while ago. I don't know if we actually talked about it on a podcast, but the idea of not being able to guess at how much people weigh or how much fat actually weighs sort of on the human frame, because it's actually not that easy to guess.
Yeah, it's not that easy. I mean, when you hold it in your hand, it's a little easier, or when you're looking at it directly, you know, so when we're doing breast reconstruction or just a simple tummy tuck, we'll carve out a chunk of skin and fat. And that skin and fat from the belly can be used to make a woman a new breast mound, basically, as part of her breast reconstruction after breast cancer.
Oh, interesting. And
so you can look at that as you get more, as I do the operation more and more, which isn't, you know, a huge amount. It's not like it's my bread and butter operation as a resident. And certainly I wouldn't want it to be, because then I wouldn't learn everything else that I need to know for this thing. But as you cut into fat, you sort of get a general idea of, you can better estimate how heavy the fat is going to be as it comes off. But just by looking at the person, it's a little difficult to tell. You know, certainly when I first started my residency, there was just no way I could tell. I could look at a woman and say, well, she's got a little bit of a paunch, if I can use that word politely. But I wouldn't be able to say, oh, well, yeah, we could, looking at her sort of desired breast size and her current breast size, could we make a breast mound that would be the same size as her breast, right? Out of the fat of her, on her tummy. And it's sort of, you know, you just can't, when you first start out, you're looking at it, you're going, well, I have really no idea. And then when it actually happens, you know, you're working with a surgeon who has far more experience than you do, so obviously they have a pretty good idea of how much it's going to be and what's feasible and what's not feasible. Mm. You know, so you do learn it, but, you know, for most people that never see fat coming off a person in one big chunk, I can't imagine how you would even go about guessing how much that fat weighs.
Right. So when people, which makes it absurd to set a body weight goal.
Yeah, it totally does. It sets you up for failure, I think, or at least psychological failure, because you have this goal in your head that it's like, well, if I lose 30 pounds or if I lose 50 pounds, then I'm going to look great. And then you hit that 50-pound mark and you still don't look that great, but that's mostly because you have not been able to identify how much that fat actually weighs.
Right. And I'll add to that, and you don't recognize that some of that weight loss wasn't fat, but it was water. And the two compartments, the loss of the two compartments in a not uniform way, so to speak, because it was never distributed uniformly.
That's right.
You're looking at it going, I thought at 180 pounds I could have sworn that's what the weight it should have been.
Yeah.
And then you're like, what? And then you get to 175, you're like, what? And then 170, and you're like, okay. And then this is why we have the permission to be light thing. At some point, you just have to accept the fact that most people around you are lying about how much they weigh in any picture they've ever posted. And anyone who's on drugs probably isn't lying, but that's because they're at a look and a weight and a leanness you can't have without drugs.
Yeah.
And so if you're going to be lean and in shape,
yeah,
the only way to ever know what you weigh when you're in shape is to, once you're in the shape you like, go stand on the scale and that's the number. And almost without fail, it'll be lighter than you think.
Yeah. And then, but even then, you still can't use that number as the number you're going to always shoot for. So you'll see, if you like the way you look and you step on the scale and you say, oh, I weigh 165.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's not necessarily, it's not necessarily the case that if you stay at 165, you're still going to continue to look awesome.
Oh, right. There's variation over time. Yeah, right. For sure.
Yeah. So the whole weight thing is really of limited utility.
Yeah, I 100% agreed. And and that causes so much problems. I don't know if the word's ironic, but the unfortunate thing is most of the fitness industry just revolves around weight numbers.
Yeah,
as the metric for result.
Yeah. Yeah. Lose 10 pounds in 10 days.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. You can do that just with a diuretic and not eating.
That's right.
But it doesn't mean any of it came from fat.
No, exactly. I mean, it doesn't mean you look any better after losing 10 pounds in 10 days.
No, not at all.
Right.
And so it's highly dependent on what compartment is being – when I say – okay, so we just – I don't know what happened. The software here just cut us off. But anyways.
Pamela's getting moody.
Yeah, no kidding. Pamela's the recording software. It, you know what? We shouldn't rip on it. It's actually pretty good. I don't know why I did that.
Yeah.
Anyway, so I guess we should just get to the I guess we're kind of getting to the what is the point of what we're talking about?
I think the point is that you have to always keep your metric in mind, right? Keep what's important in your focus. So it's really, really easy to get distracted by the other media that you're going to read. And the media that's always around you, even, when you go for food, when you're at the supermarket, like all of that stuff is always around you. And it takes, some willpower, and it also takes some resolve and possibly social support as well. Like, if you're using the forums, then that's a good idea to get your headspace into a different place, right? Where weight is no longer, you have to let go of those really, really entrenched and ingrained notions of how you measure your body. And if you're not letting go of those things, then this whole journey becomes way more difficult.
Right. If you look in the mirror, you like the progress, you like what's going on in the gym, you feel good, you step on the scale and you're like, oh, that's not the weight I was hoping I'd be.
Yeah. And if you're clinging to that, then it deflates your victory, I think, is what it does.
I can see how that would happen. Yeah. Now, and maybe this part's ironic. With all of that said, there is a weight that will be associated with – there's a weight range, let's say, that will be associated with your kind of better or best look, within the next 6 months, let's say.
Yeah.
And that range is something to do with whether or not you're fed or fasted. In one respect, even if you don't fast, so to speak, your 12-hour overnight fast versus your end of day fed.
Right.
So that's a range. Most average guys five six pounds of range in a day, no problem. And after a big eat day and having maybe two or three drinks, you know, that you could go up 7-8 pounds easy. So that doesn't mean, that just means you're full of food. That doesn't mean it's changed, you've put on 8 pounds of fat or anything like that. So that range, there will be a sort of zeroing in on what the look and the general weight range of how you're going to look right now. And then maybe 2-3 years from now, if you put on some more muscle mass, that range will shift as a range.
Yeah.
But it's never a pinpointed poundage. Like, that's ridiculous. There's no such thing as what you weigh.
No. And I think the whole thing is that if you give up weight as a metric, as a way of measuring yourself, then you're going to be focusing on the things that actually matter when it comes to how you look. So if you decide that your primary way of measuring how you're doing is by measuring your waist and your shoulders, then you're going to see those differences. You're going to see the numbers changing, mm-hmm. and, you know, hopefully those will correlate with how you like how you look.
Right. Right. And then along with what we said with the muscle index, with the various strength measurements and all that stuff added into it, and all of a sudden you have a significantly more detailed look at your progress, because it starts adding in. It's a way to fit in all of that work you're doing in the gym. And like we said, it's just so subtle. It's so hard to actually know what's changing. Even looking in the mirror, you're like, yeah, it looks better, but I don't really.
Yeah.
There's no way to like pin the number on why it looks better. I mean, that's all we're doing. We're just trying to pin numbers on it.
Yeah. And I think stepping on the scale is one of the easiest ways to sabotage that.
Mm-hmm. I mean, really, I guess, let's say it the other way around. That number, you've got to be pretty confident with how you view everything and confident with what you're doing to step on the scale and not have that number bug you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So it's a bit of a trick. And so part of Brian's insight is, the point is, Brian totally knows what, I mean, he's getting to the point where he's learning like what a couple of pounds or whatever fat looks like on a human body, which most of us just can't guess. And it's really hard for us to guess at what a changing of a certain poundage of fat wouldn't even look like. So I think it's actually impossible to imagine what 3 pounds, like, let's say in 2 weeks from now, you could drop 4 pounds of just body fat. Would you have any clue what that would look like?
I don't even know what that would look like.
No. I mean, unless Brian cut it off of you, you'd never know. And even then, that wouldn't work, because he wouldn't be able to take it off of you uniformly. He'd have to cut it out one chunk. So the point is, you can't lose just 4 pounds of body fat without the water compartment and lean mass changing to some degree. Now, lean mass doesn't mean muscle mass. It means all the other internal organs and everything else. So the mechanism that we would ever lose body fat also is going to change how your body looks just in general by manipulating your quote water compartment to some degree. So it is impossible to know what exactly 4 pounds of just fat leaving your body would ever look like.
Yeah. And it's definitely far more realistic to say I'd rather lose, you know, 2 inches off my waist.
Yeah, because who cares?
If you do that, that's actually happening.
Exactly, right? Exactly. It's actually highly theoretical to say I'm trying to lose 2 pounds of fat.
Yeah.
Like, it's what does that even look like?
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And why, and where does that goal come from? Like, who's feeding that goal to you?
Because
I don't necessarily think that those goals come from yourself. Like, you have to be fed that goal from somewhere.
Well, it's you're obviously drawing the conclusion that, you know, whatever, the 2 pounds of fat actually means I'm going to look better. Certain muscles are going to look leaner. Like, if you actually just kept asking, well, what do you think 2 pounds, you know, or let's say 10 pounds, what do you think 10 pounds of fat leaving your body would look like?
Yeah.
Oh, well, that just means I will be more ripped. Like, I'll be able to see my abs. It's like, oh, so what you're actually talking about is proportions changing.
That's right.
Yeah. And leanness changing in specific areas. Like, you know, if anyone said, well, I want to lose 10 pounds of fat, I'm like, do you want to lose all of that in your back? You know, people like, well, no. You know, no one would. No, like, who has that automatic image that, oh, yeah, that means the back of my legs and my back will be ripped?
Yeah.
You know, just on the posterior side of your body.
That's right.
Nobody thinks that, right?
No.
So when you actually force people into kind of this sort of challenging their logic of it, they're like, oh, no, my actual thought would be my waist would come in, my abs would show up, and my arms would be ripped.
Yeah. Mm. Exactly.
Yeah. So I guess what we're trying to tell you is that
stay on your metric, stay with what's important,
mm-hmm.
and ignore the rest.
Right.
And try to keep your head clear of all the other sort of fluff that's out there that's distracting you from what's actually important. Because it's impossible to get, it's impossible for you to get ripped and not have your waist size come down.
Yeah, so one's happening regardless.
Right.
So yeah.
But it is possible for you to get ripped and for your weight to not really change a whole lot when you step on the scale, you know, whenever you do that.
Especially towards the end.
Yeah.
I mean, you can get leaner and your body weight won't change. So
yeah.
That's sort of, it's not a direct relationship. It's like, I don't know, Brian, if you've been following it, but people have been on the forums. I think you and I have talked about it. We're trying to come up with a linear relationship between pounds of weight lost and inches coming off the waist.
Oh yeah, that's an exercise in frustration and futility.
Right. Now
I think it is anyway.
With the amount of information we have so far, it seemed to be somewhere around a 5 pound. Again, there's a lot that goes into it. It needs to be a consistent measurement. It needs to be in the same state, so either fed or fasted. Probably
and it needs to be coming from the same baseline as well.
Right, same baseline, so the same rough size of a guy, plus the same starting fat. So if everyone, if a group of guys are all like, whatever, 28 to 30% body fat, I'm totally just making that up.
Yeah.
And then as they move from, let's say, 30% body fat to 20% body fat, in general, there seems to be somewhat of a curved line, a straight line, saying that an inch on the waist equals roughly 5 pounds of
lost
weight
mass.
Actual mass loss, not like not eating, but actually on a consistent fasted, whatever, on a consistent measurement.
Yeah.
And then
but there's just so many variables there. Well,
and I know, and that's why everyone's talking about it. But we're just talking about like how hard this is to put together with weight. And then as you approach 15 and then 10% body fat, and again, we're not really measuring that, but we're just talking about
in
general, when you get to that, those sort of leaner looks.
Yeah.
And closing in on your ideal golden waist, then all of a sudden I think it goes curvilinear. I don't think it's linear anymore. It seems to be there's not a lot of body weight left to lose because a significant amount of water weight has long since isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
And the new eating pattern that you're probably engaged in that's keeping you along this drop and kind of looking leaner, is there's just not that much left to go as far as pure weight goes. So then it seems to go curvilinear.
Yeah, but I think on a totally different argument level. I mean, it's fun to it's sort of entertaining to have the conversation, but when you think about it, it's like the very fact that the conversation is even being had sort of indicates that people are still clinging to the old metric.
Whole
idea of, well, how much weight do I need to lose that 1 inch? And it's like, well, there's so many things that play into how you lose that 1 inch and how many pounds that correlates to for you.
Right.
And it's like, just like, if you just let go of that and you just go with how many inches you're losing and forget about how much weight you're losing, then you'll stop using that as a metric. It'll stop screwing around with your head. And I think that's the ultimate goal that I think will keep you from derailing yourself. Cause it is a bit of a mind game when you're playing, when you are dropping down that far and people are noticing and going, oh my God, you're so thin. And, you know, and that sort of thing, that's when the mind games can really screw you up.
You know what? And that's part of it. You know, we need to start a muscle index revolution. Instead of people saying, oh, how much weight have you lost? People should like, oh, what's your muscle index?
Yeah.
And then at that point, we know we've created a true paradigm shift. Because in that case, people are like, oh, I went from 27 to 28. Like, oh, good, good. The other 28s I know are in great shape or something like that.
Yeah.
So I guess what we're saying is we need people to start using the muscle index and we need to start building a data because the muscle index, like I said last week, is a unitless number. It's it only means something when you correlate it to a look, which
That's
is
right.
great too. So, you know, if your muscle index is whatever, 30 and mine's, 32, you could be like, oh, and you can look at a picture of me and go, oh, that's what a 32 looks like. This is what a 30 looks like.
Yeah.
And it's independent of height and stuff. So it's anybody at a 32 should look like everybody else at a 32, more or less, no matter how tall they are.
Right.
So, I mean, I guess that's the goal. Like we're talking about a whole new way of categorizing yourself.
Yeah. And it's a totally, I mean, it sort of flies in the face of fitness knowledge as a hobby, if I can put it that way. if you think about, you know, how people have conversations on a day-to-day basis in just regular social culture and social interaction, right?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like we take something away from people. We do really kind of – anyone who really buys into our stuff eventually just sort of realizes it's difficult to read anything else in fitness.
Yeah, no, that's absolutely true.
I mean, so we didn't do it on purpose. Like,
no,
it just, you know, I apologize if I've ruined that for somebody. It was never on purpose. I'm purely just trying to solve this stuff for myself, and I'm doing is giving you answers that, you know, Pilon and myself and Howard and whoever helps us out comes up with. So, I mean, if they wreck some of your leisure fitness reading, really, I guess the hidden message there is that was just wasting your time.
Yeah, ultimately it does, yeah.
Yep. Well, I mean, that was pretty good. I think thanks for being on. I think we covered everything we needed to cover today.
Yeah, for sure.
All right. So for Brian Chung, I'm John Barbin, and that was your Adonis Lifestyle Podcast. Compartment, I'm talking about water.